Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on Member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the Ides of February, Anno Domini 2019, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. We're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose. Nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. You're sounding particularly L today.
Yeah, I sound pretty L today.
Yeah.
I like that deep voice, resonance now we've got.
In a world. oh, that's the wrong, is that today? Oh, it is. Okay, you're fixing things. All right. You can give us a call, by the way, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. And I'll read the news while you call. That's a deal. Think your Apple product is safe from malware? That only people using Windows machines have to take precautions? According to cybersecurity software company Malwarebytes' latest State of Malware report, it's time to think again. The amount of malware on Macs is outpacing PCs for the first time ever, and your complacency could be your worst enemy. Windows machines still dominate in market share and tend to have plenty of security vulnerabilities, which has for years made them bigger and easier targets for hackers. But as Apple's computers have grown in popularity, hackers appear to be focusing more of their attention on the versions of Mac OS that power them. Malwarebytes said there was a 400% increase in threats on Mac devices from 2018 to 2019 and found an average of 11 threats per Mac device, which was about twice the 5.8 average on Windows. There is a rising tide of Mac threats hitting a population that still believes that Macs don't get viruses. We all encounter people who firmly believe this and who believe that using any kind of security software is not necessary or even harmful. This makes Mac OS a fertile ground for the influx of new threats, whereas it's common knowledge that Windows PCs need security software. As for Apple's iOS platform, which is used in its mobile devices, the new Malwarebytes report noted that there is currently no way to scan for malware, but that it is known to exist, mostly in targeted attacks by nation states, which is not something the average user has to worry about yet. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bytes with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Apple's malware problem is getting worse. And your choices are, I've been caught, I'm very worried, I'm concerned. Apple's secure enough. I'll download something today. And Apple. And, of course, other. So far, we've got 23 votes in the poll. And Apple is the number one, followed by I'm concerned, followed, in fact, by other. And if you've said other, by the way, we would love to have you post in our forums. If you go to our website, soundbites.org, that's bytes with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Scroll down on the right under fascinating stuff. You'll see the forums. The second forum down is the poll discussion. And currently, at least, the number one item under poll discussions is 15 Feb 20. Apple's malware problem is getting worse. There are currently two posts there, and we would love to have you join us at that. And, of course, you can give us a call, assuming your phone is still working. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
One of the problems that I've seen is that many of the Mac antivirus programs don't do that good a job for malware. They're really good at finding Windows viruses in your email, but they don't search that much for malware. So you need a better malware, anti-malware program, and Malwarebytes is probably among the best of them available for both Mac and Windows. And they if you want to go for the commercial version, they have deals where you can get multiple computers in your household. And we sort of have a game running. You know, when Dave used to do your PC business, you still remember what your maximum infection was on one computer?
I think it was...
It was in the tens of thousands, at
least. Yeah, I think it was close to 12,000.
Yeah.
You know, incidents. But that's still why we, to this day, still recommend not only Malware Bytes, but Super Anti-Spyware. Because no one product, and I don't even care if it's, you know, McAfee or even Norton, no one product gets it all because the way they scan. And Norton does it just one way. That's why with Super Anti-Spyware and Malware Bytes, doing the combination, one goes deep and the other goes wide.
Yeah, unfortunately, Super Anti-Spyware hasn't made a Mac version yet. So we're Malware Bytes is good for malware.
Yeah.
And then your antivirus program.
At least they're doing something.
Yep. Lately I've been liking Sophos a lot more.
Yeah.
We used to like Avast and AVG, but then they one bought the other, so now they're the same company pretty much.
Yeah.
But we've been hearing they've been having some interesting public relations problems.
Is that's a polite way to put it.
So a lot of the internet security programs will have a feature where they'll scan URLs that you go to make sure they're not known bad. Apparently, some of these companies will scan everything you go to, report every place you've gone back to the company, rather than just looking to see if this is a known bad website and warn you or not. So they're tracking everything you do, which is probably in the fine print when you said, "I want this free program." But apparently, it was enough of a revelation to a lot of people that it made its headlines around the tech press.
Yeah. We should probably go to the phones.
That sounds like an idea.
Our first caller is Jason from Altoona, PA. Hi, Jason. What's up?
Hey, first thing with the antivirus stuff, since Avast bought AVG and they got caught with their hands in the big data cookie jar, who is the now go-to recommend for antivirus on Windows?
Well, I still kind of like Sophos. They're a British company. Kaspersky has been long recommended and pretty high reputation, but there's some concern that because it's a Russian company, the government might be affecting him. Yeah. He claims they're not.
Who else has got their hands in it?
Yeah, he claims they're not, but even if they were, he would claim they're not. But Sophos tends to work out. One of the things that they have now is a internet-based web page console. So for all of the computers that you manage, and people have more and more computers at their home now. It's not uncommon to have two or three computers and then mobile devices and whatnot. You can manage them all from a single interface console. And they still have a free for home user product. Or they do have a pay for a commercial license if you want.
Right. And what's the name of it? Panda. Panda Software.
Panda.
Has an online scanner. CA makes eTrust, of course, and Komodo makes one. There's still McAfee. I think that's still around.
Yeah.
One of the Sophos is actually very good.
Yeah.
And the Norton suite.
One of the problems with the big well-known companies like Norton and McAfee is that the people who write malicious software know about the big well-known companies. And so quite frequently they won't release a product until it can get past it.
Right.
And then there's a few day overlap between when something is discovered and when the AV gets updated for it to grow in.
Yeah, well, like you said, when we've said it for over decades, you know, it's all in the timing. They try to get, it's the game of leapfrog. They bring it out just after, say, one of these companies do the update. So then the company's got to turn around and do a leapfrog over that issue. And it's, keeps going and going. And that's the way it's been ever since day one in viruses.
Right. But Sophos is still pretty good.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, so for the reason I actually called, I am really good with regular computers, but I've never done anything with the Raspberry Pi, and I know you guys have extolled its virtues.
Yeah.
But for years, what I've been looking for is a little tiny handheld device that when I go to make a meet with somebody that I'm buying a computer monitor off of Facebook, Marketplace, or Craigslist, or whatever, I would like some little gizmo that I could plug into the data port on the monitor and test it to make sure that everything's good.
You can use your phone for that. You just need to get get a video adapter for your phone, USB-C or yep. Lightning to VGA, HDMI, whatever.
Well, the good news about Raspberry Pis is they will run Linux.
Yeah.
In fact, you can run Windows on them, but, response time is measured with a calendar. But you can do it. But if you're at all Linux savvy, Raspbian, the Debian version of Linux for the Raspberry Pi, is available. And in fact, that's what I run on mine. And it comes with a full graphical user interface, and you can run pretty much any program you want on it.
And the HDMI port is right there on the Raspberry Pi.
Right, and you've got an HDMI port. So, it doesn't have composite video. It doesn't have DVI or that, but you can get adapters for those. But it does have a built-in HDMI port. And I've plugged it into my television. I've plugged it into monitors. I've plugged it into pretty much everything, and it works on all of them.
Okay, cool. So you think that will be a good solution for what I'm looking for then?
Oh, I think it's a great solution.
Yeah, and it's very portable. And, I mean, you're talking about, that you don't need a lot of power because,
In fact, I saw a YouTube channel video, the other week where a guy he 3D printed a case for it, but he used airplane batteries.
Oh yeah,
to power the thing. He got the high end airplane batteries, but he still got four hours out of it.
Some of them are bigger than the Raspberry Pi.
Yes, some of them are. Yeah. Yes, but you can buy a 7-inch screen for them, so you can have an entire walk around computer in your hand there. Touchscreen, in fact. But if you want to plug it into something, then yeah, you just bring the Raspberry Pi, the power cord, and an HDMI cable, and you're done.
And the other thing too, which is nice, is you can even run it in your car, because it only takes 5 volts, and all you're doing is taking the USB to micro USB adapter, plug it into the USB port on the car. And you can boot your Raspberry Pi up from that, too.
Okay. One last thing, and I'll take the answer to this one off the air. Could you talk about some, or better yet, post some links to places where I can learn about the architecture and all the different capabilities of the Pi? I'm sure there's a Raspberry Pi for Dummies book, but I'd also like some online stuff that I can play with to learn to understand the full capabilities of this device.
Sure. The best thing to do is just go and do a YouTube search.
Okay.
The YouTube videos that are out there, because I hooked up a Nexion screen, as Nick was saying. Nexion makes different screens.
Yeah, he wanted to take that answer
and
off.
And they're great in being able to tell you how to hook them out and what they can do and designing them. There's a whole another page on just creating your own screen and what you want it to do.
And there's a lot of nice information at RaspberryPi.org, too. Looks like they have their own printed magazine, the Magpie.
The Magpie. It's a nice magazine, actually.
And there are several beginner's guides to the Raspberry Pi as well. But it's amazing how many really cool instructional things you can find on YouTube these days. Although you sometimes have to go through two or three of them before you find someone whose style and pacing you like.
Right.
Yeah.
But the reality is that pretty much the entire hacker community is using the Raspberry Pi to make cool toys. So you can find
a whole library of stuff out there, in whatever you want to do.
They have Magpie has a special deal now where you get 12 issues and a free Raspberry Pi Zero.
Nice.
When you subscribe to the physical magazine.
Well, and of course, that's the other thing. Which Raspberry Pi do you want? The Zero, the Three, the Four, whatever number.
You just got to watch it with the Four, though, right now. There's still working out some, I'll say, issues, because it does run a lot hotter.
It runs a lot hotter, and they did a couple of stupid things with the placement of the I/O.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, it's very fine. I still use my Raspberry Pi 3B.
I've got the 3B Plus.
Plus, maybe?
Yeah, the 3B Plus is probably what you have. And matter of fact, I've got three of them. Two of them I use in the house. The other one is in my van, which I converted, that I showed you, to create that display for the ham radio.
Right.
And that does DMR. And right on the fly with the Raspberry Pi, with the touch screen, I can change modes and anything else that I want on it.
Right. But you can do anything with a Raspberry Pi. But it is a full Raspbian is a full Debian. So it's not going to be the fastest, depending on which Raspberry Pi you get. It's not going to be the fastest computer you've ever used. But, you know, you can get a machine with 1.4 gig, 1.7 gig, mm-hmm. and 4 gig of RAM, plus, you know, however many and how big you want them to be thumb drives plugged into the USB ports. And it comes with a micro SD slot for booting. And you could put that on a 16 gig or a 256 gig or whatever size you want. So you're going to have a pretty beefy little box carrying around with you.
Well, I've even seen people put external hard drives up to them.
Right.
You know, and you just Velcro that to the bottom. And again, it doesn't take a lot of power.
Right. And you'll find that it does dual display in point of fact. So you could, if you had the right cables, carry around a little box that's a self-contained Pi and plug the other one into somebody else's monitor to test if that's still working.
I've seen people go to like Walmart and just get small Tupperware containers.
Yeah.
And they, you know, Velcro the various components in that and then have the cables that they need to hook up coming out one of the ports. Again, it's flexibility, you know, and they get those little Tupperware ones with the handle on it, so they just grab it and go.
Grab it and go. And it works great if it's not a 4. As Dave said, the 4 overheats significantly. Oh, you took away our Echo. Was that going out over the air?
No.
And now batting third. Oh.
No, that goes into my headphones.
All our headphones, yeah.
And when you have the hearing aids.
That was, well, yeah. Hold on, ladies and gentlemen. We did forget to mention that Rob Linton was here.
And just blew all his processing.
I just blew
all
your processors out. My pleasure. My pleasure.
Yeah, can you do something about this knob? It goes from off to too loud.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? Rob was here. They've put some new processors in for the microphones. And so if we sound a little different, it's still us. As you can see on the YouTube video, hi, we're still us, but we might sound a little different.
Anyway, set new levels for you.
Yeah, he set new levels for everybody. But yeah, the Raspberry Pi, and if you go to raspberrypi.org, that's where you'll find all this stuff. The Raspberry 4 Model B, the 3A, the A+, I mean. There's all kinds of stuff, cases and HDMI cables and extra bits and pieces. If you're the sort of person who's into electronics projects, there's a breadboard. If you go to a place called Canakit, CANAKIT.com, you can buy the entire Raspberry Pi starter kits. There's one for the 4. There's one for the 3. There's a breadboard things. There's a kit for, it used to be $89. I don't know what it is now, but it used to be $89. They gave you a Raspberry Pi 3B, a breadboard, a case, heat sinks, which could be useful for a 3, depending on what you're doing, and all the cables you want, and a bunch of diodes and resistors and LEDs. Just a whole bunch of cool stuff.
And they're also making other adapters. As you look at the Raspberry Pi, there's a long row of connectors. It looks like an old IDE cable, best way to describe it, with the pins. And they have various adapters that you can slip on top of this that do other functions. Like one of the ones that I use, it's called an MMDVM. And what it is, it's a modem that literally slides onto the top of it. And then you can then use your wireless internet to connect to it. So it now makes it portable. You're not, you know, you don't have to be wired to, say, a home network. You can literally makes it wireless that you can go out over the internet and tether it to your phone and everything else.
And they have all kinds of other things, digital clocks, digital meters. FM transmitters.
The screens?
Mic amplifiers, PIC programmers, signal generators, light chasers, LED things.
game
motor controllers
and the screens, the different screens that you can
5-inch, 7-inch, 9-inch, or just plug it into your 28-inch monitor.
Yeah, whatever you want, whether you want to be portable or whether you want to be stationary.
One of the things they did at RIT, every single lab has a Raspberry Pi. They have a monitor in the windows of every lab that says, you know, what's happening in this lab today and mm-hmm. what the open hours are and all that stuff. It's all run by Raspberry Pi sitting behind it.
Yeah.
Just tacked to the back of the monitor. It's very cool.
There it goes.
So, yeah, they're very neat. They're very neat toys. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Andy from Greece, New York. Hi, Andy. What's up?
You were touching on a malware bytes report on security. And you highlighted the Mac part of it. Did they say anything relating to Chromebooks and Android phones and things like that?
Nope. This was strictly this particular report was entirely about Macs.
Okay.
Yeah, that's that just happened to be the one they put out today. It's just Macs only.
Okay. Yeah, Chromebooks are generally safe because they just run a web browser, so you can get all the fake ads from web browsing. In fact, we've seen that on the show here. Nick gets an ad saying his Windows computer is infected.
Yeah,
it's not Windows, it's not infected. And Android, if you only download things from the Google Play Store, and with iOS only downloading things from the Apple Store, you're generally safe. Every now and then, both companies do find malicious programs that have snuck their way on and removed them. But the big problem in the Android world is that you can turn off that protection and then sideload an app from anywhere. And there was Fortnite, a very popular game, that didn't want to pay Google their 30% cut. So they gave people instructions on how to sideload the game. And what, within hours it was?
Yeah.
Bad guys were making fake versions of Fortnite with those sideload instructions so you could install malware on your Android machine.
Yeah. And you do have to worry, even on a Chromebook, you need to worry about what extensions you've loaded. In fact, that's our next news item after the
teaser.
Break. We'll talk about that.
I ask only because this area just changes. It's so fluid, and what's true one day isn't true the next. So
right.
It kind of begged the issue. I figured I'd ask and see if you'd heard anything had changed. It sounds like it hasn't.
No. This particular report was strictly for Macintoshes, and they touched on iOS devices as well. But they do put out regular reports about what's going on in the industry, and if there's anything that changes in the Chromebook or Android or Windows world, I'll let you know.
Well, I'm sure if something changes in the world of Chromebooks, you'll be telling everybody about it. So.
Oh yes.
Okay. Well, you guys have a good afternoon, and thank you very much.
Well, you too. Thanks. Yeah, we do put those out. I also put those out in my weekly newsletter. And in my app, in fact.
All right, we're coming up on a break, but somebody just texted us, and I'll remind folks that you can text us with your questions also, 585-209-9010. And it said, from Jerry in Rochester, he says, "Hi, can you discuss current concerns about smart homes, appliance systems like Wemo? Thanks, Jerry in Rochester."
Yeah, Jerry, those things are, look, the fact is that smart home stuff is prevalent, is just getting big everywhere. And, of course, smart home stuff really means just devices that are connected to the Internet. And there's the rub, right? It's called the Internet of Things, or IoT. And the security on most IoT devices is pretty much non-existent. But we'll talk a little bit about that when we come back. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Well, that must mean you're listening to Soundbites right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 36 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. We were talking about smart home concerns. The problem with them is that most of the Internet of Things devices, the IoT devices that give us a smart home, have no security in them, and that you can't put any on them. No. They're just not that.
They weren't built that way,
right?
And when problems are found, they don't get fixed,
right? And so you will find that most break-ins these days to people's home internet, the bad guys are concentrating on the Internet of Things, the smart home stuff. So if you are getting a device for your smart home, and they have, I actually got 4 smart plugs, mm-hmm. which I've never plugged into anything. So I don't want to. Basically, the fact is, if you're going to get a smart home thing, check the security of that particular device first,
and make sure it can be updated. Hopefully,
right.
Hopefully, remotely by them. So, because the average person isn't going to do updates to their camera or their refrigerator or whatnot.
Right.
One of the things you can sort of do to help mitigate the issues a little bit is to put your smart devices on your guest network, which should be isolated in your router. From your regular network. If your router is written properly.
Right.
Which is another problem.
Then it becomes a pain in the neck to access them from your phone.
Well, most of them have apps that will just look on the internet.
Right.
If you're doing a direct IP connection, it gets a little trickier. But if your smart devices are on the guest network, if someone does break into them, it's harder to access your network, but they still can be used to attack other people. There's botnets of DVRs. Home DVRs, hundreds of thousands of them that are constantly attacking people with different types of attacks.
And this is anything you have that connects to the internet, your television, your DVR, your Roku box, your everything.
We've seen refrigerators that have blue screens of death. Why are they running Windows? Or it's a text Unix boot with a firmware error, and now you got to call the computer repair technician to come update the firmware in your refrigerator.
And don't even get me started about cars.
Yeah.
Connected to the internet. We've already seen people have their cars taken control of and everything else.
It's a mobile computer connected to the internet with wheels.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. All right, to the news. And remember, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. Another day, another batch of crappy Chrome extensions that you shouldn't be using. Once again, Google has identified a number of bad actors in its Chrome Web Store and given them the boot. But that doesn't automatically remove these malware extensions from your browser, so you might want to do a quick cross-reference of any extensions that sound a little odd. In other words, you're probably good if all you use is 1Pass and uBlock Origin. However, if you've installed something like, say, Arcade Yum, it's time to check it in that particular case, remove it. Cisco's Duo security team was responsible for digging up these malicious extensions, but their investigations were first prompted by the work of security researcher Jamila Kaya. She used Cisco's CR Excavator tool to find these crappy Chrome extensions, with many of them mimicking each other in terms of attack vectors and what they're trying to do to users and user systems and even their names. According to Duo, around 1.7 million users had installed the 70 or so extensions that Kaya initially identified. From there, Google searched and removed a total of 500 or so related extensions that performed similar sketchy activities. While we don't have a list of those, if only, you can at least check your Chrome browser for the ones I've listed on the Security Tango website. At securitytango.com, you can get to it in two ways. You can just go to securitytango.com/badchrome.php, or if you go to the Security Tango website itself, under Tango Links, the last one, the fourth one, is Bad Chrome Extensions. And it will take you to a list of all the ones that you should check to see if you have and delete them if you do. And it also links to the CR Excavator tool. If you have any extensions installed that sound like any on that list, remove them. They're malware.
If you didn't intentionally install them for a feature they offered,
right? Or
probably,
even if you did, and if it's like a game thing,
well, yeah, and
malware.
A lot of them they claim to be will make your internet search better for us,
right? For us,
we'll track your packages better for us,
right? If you have any extensions installed, like they sound like the ones on the list, remove them. They're malware. Going forward, make sure you're doing more than just review. Just using reviews on the Chrome Web Store as the deciding factor for whether or not you should install an extension. Read around the web to see if others are using the extension, have recommended it, or have anything to say about it. You can even throw extensions you're considering into Cisco's CR Excavator tool. There's a link on that page, on my bad Chrome page, to it. And that'll give you a quick sense as to whether or not it's a risky extension. The tool might be a bit confusing for non-techie people, though, so use common sense, including visiting extension developer's website, thinking about the permissions an extension wants, and trusting your gut, which is probably going to be your best defense. Extensions are great, but you probably don't need to pack your browser full of them. And in fact, the more of them you use, the slower your browser is. I know people who complain constantly, whoa, Chrome is so slow, and then I look in their extensions, yep, they've got 45 extensions. Well,
that are all trying to do
different stuff.
No, all doing the same thing. They're all advertising things, trying to track
right,
your pages.
Yeah. Right, right. And so, yeah, I get that. So how many extensions are you running? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. And Steve's going to put a link to the bad Chrome page on the Security Tango. And from there, you can even get a link to CR Excavator. .io, and that'll be good. And in the meantime, we are going to go back to the phones, and we are going to talk to Mark from Greece, New York. Hi, Mark. What's up?
Good afternoon.
It is that.
It is. Better than yesterday, that's for sure.
Yep.
I was going to say, I downloaded the new, just released version of Edge.
Oh, yeah.
Based on Chromium. Yep.
It is worlds apart. Better than the original Edge.
Sure, sure. What for the
rest of
you?
Because it's based on Chromium.
Right, all right. For the rest of you, what Mark is talking about is that Microsoft's browser, web browser, is called Edge, and it's what's the word, the technical term? Crap.
It was better than IE though.
Well, yeah.
Not much.
Yeah. So is walking down the street and looking around. But what they did was they decided that they had lost the browser war and that they were just going to use Chrome. And so what they did was, they've essentially just taken Chrome and put a Microsoft skin over it. And that's the new Edge. And Mark is right. It's Chrome. So it's a gazillion times better than Edge.
It's fast.
Yep.
It is really fast.
Yep.
I couldn't believe it. I was like, you can have a browser now that's supposedly Microsoft that's actually decent.
Well, exactly, and that's because it's actually the Chromium browser.
Right, right. And then there's a lot of similarities there, so you won't have a hard time if you're a Chrome user or, you know,
An Edge user.
Even if you're an Edge user, they did kind of set it up the same way.
Right.
But, they tweaked it for themselves. But very nice.
Good. I'm glad you liked it.
Talking about filtering for the Internet.
Yeah.
I find that Komodo's filter and Malwarebytes work very well together.
Yes, they do.
They work very well together. They have saved me many a time.
Yep,
and they're well worth both using.
Yep, and as we said, you know, Komodo, running any antivirus program is great, but it doesn't do everything. Malwarebytes in conjunction with your antivirus program is the way to go. And Mark is absolutely right about that.
They both do wonderful filtering of the Internet, and you will get a screen that pops up and says, you know, get me out of here.
Yep,
doesn't look right.
Yep,
and,
exactly.
They're both wonderful, so I can't say enough about either one of them.
Good. Excellent.
Yep. Have a good one, guys. Thank you.
Thanks, Mark. You too.
Yep.
And what's kind of interesting is they even made Microsoft Edge for Mac OS now.
Yeah.
Because it's Chromium, which...
It's just Chromium with their skin on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know why you would use it instead of Chrome itself.
Right.
But you certainly can.
Safari or Firefox or Opera or...
And everything else. Yeah. Right. But you certainly could.
But it was nice they took the effort.
Yeah, well, they honestly, seriously lost the browser wars, even though they gave it away to everybody and pretty much forced you to use it. people found that Edge was like IE, was crap. It was very badly written. It was very slow. It had let in all kinds of bad stuff. So putting Chromium out there as their internal is a much better thing. Oh, I want to remind everybody, Monday is the date of the ancient Roman feast of Fornicalia. So you should all celebrate appropriately.
It's my wife's birthday too.
It is President's Day.
And right.
You hear that, honey? We have to fornicate.
No. Fornicalia is the feast day of the goddess Fornax, the god of the hearth and bread baking. So make bread.
Oh.
And although, yes, it is likely the root word of fornication because of the ancient term, a bun in the oven.
Nice.
Yep. Oh. So Monday is bread making day, everybody. Or if you prefer to do that on Sunday, I think the Roman goddess Fornax would not mind.
Well, do it on Rome time or Eastern time?
Yes.
Yeah.
Either UTC. One. You choose, right. But yeah, so we used to have a fornicalia party every year and tell people to dress appropriately and bring the appropriate gifts. And of course, they'd show up and we'd have bread.
Yeah. Nobody could look it up.
Yeah, right. Well, back in the day,
you didn't have the Google.
Right, you didn't have the internet at all. Although we had Google. We just called them librarians.
Yeah.
I mean, ever since I was a little kid, the number I knew my number, I knew my friend Lou Fico's number, and I knew the library number because you could call them and ask them. Anything. Oh, my
phone
is trying to tell me something.
She's asking you.
I don't want to call anybody. Thanks, though.
Call mom.
Yeah.
Because you can't hang up on your mom.
Right. If this phone could call my mom, it would be an amazing phone. But what I've done with my phone, by the way, it's now sitting face down. Android, at least the Pixel line, I don't know about others, has a new feature called, not new feature, called flip to shh.
Mm-hmm.
And you set it on, and when your phone is face down, it will not ring.
Go to the chat.
Oh, I have to look in the chat?
If you would. He asked if he could ask a question.
Yeah.
So I said, yeah.
Gary asked if he could ask a question, and I said, well, we're not always looking at the YouTube page, but okay. Why does my printer register twice in devices and printers? Okay, I'm going to assume you're a Windows user, although you don't say that, and I'm going to assume that your printer is on the network in some way, whether it's wired or wireless. If those are bad assumptions, please let me know.
And that could be why it's listed twice, once wired and once wireless.
Exactly. Many printers nowadays can be both wired and wireless. And if they are, they will get two separate addresses, so you will see it two separate times in your devices. It is also not impossible that depending on what driver you have loaded, when you had... I've seen this particularly with people who replaced old printers with a newer model of the same printer, of the same company, like two HP printers. The old driver finds the new printer. It can't use all the features, but it still finds the new printer and sets itself up for that. Plus, the new driver, which can use all the features, sets itself up. So you end up with essentially two printers going to the same place. One has all the features and one does not.
Yep.
If it in fact bothers you, the best thing to do is to go in and make sure you're only running one driver. And well, the best thing to do is go in and delete your drivers.
Yeah, uninstall the original.
Uninstall the whole thing.
Delete both printers.
Right. And make sure that your printer is only wired or wireless, but not both, So if you want it wired, turn off the wireless in the printer itself. If you want it wireless, disconnect the Ethernet cable. And then let it find the printer and install it again, and you should just have one driver.
And sometimes Windows will auto-detect the printer on the network and pop it in. But if you've already run the printer setup and added it manually, have it twice. Right. So that's why same thing happens in the Mac as well. And what we usually say is delete both the printers and let it auto-detect the one that it wants to print to, and that's probably the one you want to print to.
Oh, and here's another thing that it could be. That happened to a friend of mine this week who's probably listening, saying, are you going to mention me? Yes, I'm mentioning you. His printer was actually listed several times in his Chromebox. Ooh. And what happened was he'd had a couple of power outages, and every time it came up, it got a different IP address.
Yeah.
So he had, three separate, two of which didn't work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they'll say offline or something like that.
Right. Mm-hmm. Because it came back with a different IP address. And what I should have done, and I wasn't thinking carefully, is I should have set it up in his router to get a static IP address, which I didn't think about. But next time you buy me lunch, I'll do that.
Reserved based on the MAC address is sometimes easier than a static address.
Right.
I always get a kick out of people who, they print something and it doesn't work, so they print it again.
And again.
And then when they finally turn the printer on, all 16 copies come out.
Yep.
If you printed once and nothing happened, it probably isn't going to happen again.
Right.
Well, they think hitting a key multiple times is going to make it, wake up.
Yeah. Oh, you wanted to print. Oh, okay, I can do that.
Or on the opposite side, I'll print something and go over to the printer and it never comes out.
Yeah.
So I walk back to the computer and it's still waiting on the how many copies do you want? And you have to hit OK.
Yeah. Well, I wait until it comes back and says your copies have been printed.
Yeah.
My Chromebooks and my Linux box do that.
Mm-hmm.
I would imagine Windows and Mac do the same.
Or just open up the window in the printer and see that it's empty.
Yep.
Or open it up and see all those other jobs you tried printing.
Yeah, right.
Well, like I say, that's the... my wife has that habit. She'll sit there, and because the thing is offline, and she doesn't look... just across the way.
You're right, all right.
That the light is red, not green, which means you just got to turn it off, turn it back on, and it'll go back. She'll sit there. Duh, duh, duh. It's not printing. Duh, duh, duh. Wait a minute. Yeah. And I had to go to her printer queue, and she might have 12 queues of it.
Yeah.
First, I go over and clean those all out, just leaving one. And then I turn the printer off, turn it back on. And it prints.
Unbelievable.
She goes, what did you do? Never mind.
Yeah, right.
We've noticed
it was technical. Yeah. I fixed it. We had a guy when I was at Chase. We had a guy in a department that...
Really?
Unbelievable, isn't it? Who was just, he was a know-it-all. He knew everything there was to know about computers and was always a pain in the neck. And we had a guy who worked for us who was a programmer. But sometimes we had to send him out to talk to people, and this guy knew he could bully this guy because he wasn't really the tech guy, he had gone to fix the printer and had missed one little thing. It was an IBM printer, and of course they were finicky as heck anyway, but he had one little issue that he had forgotten to check, and of course that was the problem. The guy had said about 10 times, that's the issue, you should do that, you should fix that, you should make it that. So I went over to look at it, and my friend was saying, please, please don't, if it's that, don't tell him. So I went over and I fixed it, and he's over there hovering over my shoulder. What did you do? What did you change? What did you fix? What was wrong with it? I looked at him and I said, it's technical. I fixed it. You got a problem with that? No. Go do your job. I'll do my job.
How many software engineers does it take to change a light bulb?
None. It's a hardware problem. No, yes. It's exactly right.
But we have noticed an interesting trend lately in printers in the last few years. It used to be, especially in businesses, you'd get one printer for the floor because they were expensive. But then the boss had to have his own printer because he couldn't be walking across the floor.
Yeah.
And as printers got cheaper and cheaper, it's now common for a printer on every desk So as a salesperson, we like that.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You're selling more printers,
especially if they're ink.
Yeah, liquid ink. But they're never the same model, so you end up having to stock a bunch of different types of cartridges.
Right.
But now we're starting to see laser printers. You know, black and white laser printers are under $100.
Yep.
Color laser printers are under $200.
It's ridiculous.
So it's the first color laser printer, you know, marketed to like almost the home small business home market, $50,000.
Yep.
And we would go to the store, and it's where I met Jackie.
Yep.
We'd go to the store to just, you know, look at it and touch it. And my only $50,000 for a color laser printer.
Yeah, no kidding. And the color was not the best, but it was certainly amazing for $50,000.
Right. And a lot better than the impact printer with the multicolor ribbon you used to have.
Or the crayon one.
The crayon jets, yeah.
That's what I told the problem, of course, with inkjets is most of them are badly written. The software is badly written. So we used to have a printer. My daughter, I had an inkjet printer for my daughter because she was going through a blue period. Everything she printed was essentially pages of nothing but blue. And if the blue ink ran out, you couldn't print.
Right. Doesn't matter.
Cyan.
Doesn't matter that there's three other colors in
there. There's three other colors, and all I want is text in black. Nope, you don't have any blue left. Well, but now with most of these now, when you do that sort of thing, you get separate toners for each color, and you can replace just one toner.
Well, and a lot of people don't realize the cost of the ink because you buy the printer really, really cheap, and then the ink is so expensive. You work it out. Those little tanks are like a half a milliliter.
Yeah.
And you think of your 2-liter bottle of soda that you buy. You work that out, and it's like $3,000 or $4,000 a gallon for liquid ink.
Yep.
So several printer companies now have their Max tanks or Eco tanks. A lot of times there was a normal tank and the bigger tank, but now they're coming up with really big tanks. So it might be $20 for a tank, but it's going to last 300 or 400 pages.
Right. Are you playing music?
No.
No. Okay. Good. I miss it. Yeah. And now it is actually cheaper to buy a new inkjet printer than it is to replace the ink on an inkjet printer. All right, that music tells me, and I'm hearing it this time, thank you. That music tells me that we have wasted an hour of our lives together. It was a joy to do so, but you know what? We're not done. Don't go away, because we're going to be back very shortly with a whole nother hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. A whole nother hour of Dave Enright, a whole nother hour of Steve Ray, and a whole nother hour of Nick Francesco, and a whole nother hour of you. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, or toll free at 1-800-790-0415. Take a quick bio break, I know I'm going to, but come back for another hour of Soundbites, right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you on the other side.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
Online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. And while I read the news, you can give us a call. Oh, well, happy fornicalia, 2 days early. You can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Or toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 7, at least twice now, but it seems that it is being forced to continue supporting it anyway and it has only itself to blame. While the end of life for Windows 7 means Microsoft will no longer provide security updates and bug fixes, it doesn't mean Microsoft would render Windows 7 computers unusable. Yet that seems to be the case, as the number of complaints about suddenly broken Windows 7 computers rise, including one that is preventing users from shutting down at all. Microsoft recently pushed out an update to fix what it broke in an attempt to notify users that Windows 7 had expired. Owners of computers running that update were suddenly greeted by a black wallpaper that they naturally objected to, and very vehemently. Microsoft relented, but yet another and more serious problem seems to have cropped up. In the past few days, Windows 7 users are complaining that they're being told they have no permission to shut down their own computer. So somewhere along the line, Microsoft, in trying to get people off of Windows 7, has made it impossible for them to get off Windows 7. Of course, they've been able to do so normally in the past, which only deepens the mystery. Various causes and workarounds have been presented, but not all of them work for everyone. Microsoft has only recently acknowledged that it has received reports, but shockingly, it has not confirmed the issue. It also hasn't given any word yet on a definitive fix. It will have to push out a fix, of course, despite the end of official support for Windows 7, and it better take care not to introduce yet another show-stopping bug while it does so. Not unless it wants to be accused of using such tactics to push people to upgrade Windows 10, which is also a recipe for a lawsuit. Mm-hmm. So, are you still using Windows 7 as your daily driver? Why? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
That's where I would say a lot of folks, and it was a very good tool to have within Windows 7, was the rollback.
Yep.
You could, you know, it would have restore points. And all you have to do is simply, hopefully, you know, by default, they were turned on. Very few folks turned them off. But what you can do is you can go into the menu, go into accessories, and under system tools, there's a restore point. And you can look at the restore calendar and pick a time just before that update was done, and that should put your computer back to the point before Windows got messed up with their great update.
That's assuming you didn't turn off.
Yeah, and hopefully, I found for the most part when I was doing computer repair, over 90% of the folks didn't even know where to turn it off. So
right.
By default, it was turned on, thankfully.
Right.
That it would, you know, record all those restore points. And, matter of fact, you could go back quite often, a couple of months.
Yep. One of the problems with those restore points is they take up space on your computer. Mm-hmm. So if you've got a low-end computer with a small hard drive, that's an issue.
Yep.
Nowadays, 256 gig seems to be the minimum. Many people have a half a terabyte of disk space.
Yeah.
So that sort of thing is much, much less of a
problem.
If
not a terabyte. I mean, terabyte drives are
right.
so common now.
Although we are going back the other way now with laptops getting SSDs, they're generally smaller than desktop drives.
Mm-hmm.
Because large SSDs are expensive. So we're seeing a lot of laptops now are coming with 128, 256. If you want a bigger SSD, it can often cost a lot more.
Right.
Yeah.
But, you know, I find, well, what's interesting to me is that you can often buy two 250 gig drives for less than you would pay for a 500 gig drive.
Yeah.
And so you can always, you know, depending on if it's a laptop, you're probably stuck with one device. But
and the bigger they are, the greater the differential is.
Yeah.
Apple's selling an 8 terabyte drive on its new Mac Pro. And I think it's $7,000.
Yep.
For 8 terabytes.
Yeah. Which is less than a terabyte a grand, which is less than a grand a terabyte. Yeah.
Which is what they all used to be
right.
Just a few years ago.
That's exactly right. But yeah, and a lot of that is being driven by the fact that 16 gig and 32 gig SSDs are being churned out by the millions because those are going into Chromebooks. Because on a Chromebook, you don't need that much storage because
no.
Everything's in the cloud.
Yep.
So they've made 16 and 32 gigabyte drives, which then you come to the economy of scale. The more you make, the cheaper they get. So that you can get a 16 or 32 gig SSD card for ridiculously small amounts of money. But unless you are running a Chromebook, they're not that useful. They're not that useful to you. Although you can certainly run Linux on them, or in fact, Neverware, the cloud ready software from Neverware.
And the other thing too, though, is the convenience of the Chromebook is, you know, if you actually do need more space, hooking up a USB drive, you know, an external hard drive is very simple, if fine, and you can store stuff off there if that be the need, or, you know, you want to do additional backups like we preach, you can do it off to one of those, besides saving it just up into the cloud, which we highly recommend. And I say, especially with your photos and your documents, folks, you got to take the time to get those backed up. Because, again, I had another friend at work was complaining because, you know, well, they lost all this stuff. And I go, I told you months ago, put it up in the cloud. Well, I don't know if I could trust it. And I go, and what are you going to do now?
Yep.
Because the hard drive crashed. I says, that's going to cost you quite a bit of money to send that hard drive off to get it looked at. Oh, they just can't take it out and spin it. No, not if it crashed. You're SOL.
Especially if it's a physical crash and physically damaged the platter.
You're done.
Yeah.
You're done.
He goes, well, yeah, it's not even spinning up or anything else. I go, I warned you. I said, even picking up a small flash drive, because I was preaching to the folks there in the lunchroom, flash drives are so cheap. And just to back up your photos or put them up where they're free. You have free storage. I told them, you know, I've stored photos up there for a few decades now.
Yep.
And, you know, I don't have to worry about it because they're there. And I'd be lost and severely hurt that if I lost some of them because they mean a lot to me. But you know what? They meant enough to me that I took the time to back them up there.
We have so many customers that have come in and said, I meant to back up, or they'll buy a backup device and never use it, or they used it the one time when they bought it from us and we set it up for them and it never ran again. It's a shame how often it happens.
Or what it used to tick me off too is somebody would sit there and partition a drive.
Yeah.
And then, you know, do all their backups to the D-partition. And I go, where's your backups? Well, they're over on the D partition.
No.
No. Where's your backups? Like I said, over there. I said, but your hard drive is dead. Yeah, but that's just a C. C and D are on the same drive. The drive is dead.
Yep.
You mean I lost everything? Yeah, we told you to put it on a separate drive. But, you know, and they come back, well, this drive was so big, I was never going to fill it. That was not the point. The point was it was on a separate device in case something did happen, because it's not a matter if, it's a matter of when. And that's one thing we can't drive home enough. There are electronic devices. They're like a light bulb, folks. A light bulb will come on so many times, and then it gets that bright light, and then burns out.
Yep. And you know, online storage is ridiculously cheap these days. You get 15 gig with Google directly. I use a company called pCloud. It's $175 one-time payment for a lifetime of half a terabyte. $175.
Where are you going wrong with that?
It's up on the cloud. If you'd rather have 2 terabytes, it's $350. Twice as much money for 4 times as much data.
But
it's ridiculous. And it happens automatically. When I put something in my documents folder, it automatically gets backed up to the cloud. I don't even think about it. There's another one called Zools, which I...
There is no Dana, only Zools.
Only Zools. I forget what I paid for a lifetime of that, but it wasn't out of range of the other one.
Yeah.
And most of the online backup services are $5 a month if you want to do it online. We like
right.
It's nice to have an online backup so that it's not in your facility. So fire, flood, theft, you know.
Whatever.
Do you lose the hard drive and right. the computer it's sitting next to? It's nice to have that internet backup too. But just have something. Have at least one other thing, if not two or three.
Well, yeah, that's why I said, you know, I just had the experience that my Windows 7 machine crashed. It totally right. bit the bullet. It owed me nothing.
Yep.
But it was like, oh, shoot. And what I was oh shooting about is now I had to set up another new machine.
Right.
It wasn't that I lost data.
Because you had that backed up.
I had everything backed up. It was all up on the cloud. No problems. You know, it's there. Nothing's, you know, was lost.
Right.
All I had to do was, oh, shoot. Yeah, reload all these programs. And, you know, it was the time-consuming part of that. Yep. I mean, that was a thankful thing. I was very glad of that, that was my only frustration. Right. Not that I lost this particular photo or this document or that document. And I've been writing quite a bit of stuff because it's getting older. You know, I might not remember the sequence of things that I do, especially right. with my ham radio setting stuff up. I'm writing it down in Google Docs.
Yep, that's
and
the
it
way
doesn't,
to do it.
Because, as a matter of fact, I was just at a ham meeting just last week, or 2 weeks ago, and I had to bring something up for somebody. Oh, yeah, here it is. And I was able to go through the whole steps. I go, oh, that's pretty cool. I go, yeah, I keep everything up in Google Docs. It doesn't matter. I can be on my computer, my phone, whatever. It's there with me.
Yep. I do the same thing. Back when I was a systems administrator, we created site books for our systems.
Yep.
It's everything, all the hardware, all the software, all the additions, all the changes, all the deletions, every single thing so that you can
all
go
the license
back.
Codes.
All the licensing codes. So I don't worry about those anymore. So yeah. I'm running Linux or a Chromebook. But yeah, all of those things that are essential to recreating that system. And in fact, one of the things that my system will allow me to do, because it's Linux, is I can, there's a command that will back up the list of every program that I have installed.
Yep.
And then on a new machine, I can take that list and say, install all of these. And I'm done. I just sit and wait for it to happen. I don't have to remember what to do. I don't have to do anything. It's really very, very nice.
All right. We did get one text question in here. And it says, I would like to ask the question about my browser running apps after I close the browser. Why do they want to do this? And should I say no?
It depends on what those apps are. If it's something you install. For example, I have a couple of apps that do some backup stuff while I'm working. Okay, they may not be done yet, so they want to keep running until they are done. But if you didn't set up something like that, then it may be you have malware in your browser, and you should do some checking
yeah.
and make sure that that's cleaned out and clear.
Make sure you're running a clean machine.
Right, exactly. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is David from Bergen, New York. Hiya, David. What's up?
Hey, guys. Nick, I think it was last week you mentioned that you use pCloud.
Yeah.
Well, I checked it out. I installed the, on Linux Mint, I installed the free version.
Yep.
And it's wonderful. I cannot believe how easy it is to use and set up.
Isn't it true?
So yesterday they had a Valentine's Day special. It was $122.50 for the 500 gigabytes of your lifetime membership, so I did it.
Good. Good for you. I think that's still in effect. I'm bringing up the page right now. Yep, $122.50. Looks like I'll be getting that for my Valentine.
Oh, there you go.
And also my daughter, so that they each have it.
Oh,
right.
Yeah, that's a smart move.
Yeah. So
Harold all the way around.
Yeah. It's great. You get 30-day trash history. You get a half a terabyte of storage. You get a half a terabyte of download link traffic. Basically, you could download the whole thing at once. Right?
Wow.
So upload seems to be free. You can share files.
Yes.
So it's actually a pretty cool deal. And come on.
I'm just starting to learn how to use it. I was looking at the manual because I don't have any cloud backup. You know, I have backups on a couple different hard drives, but if our house burns down, I'm screwed.
Right. Well,
so
I
wanted to use that to back up our computers. Yeah.
Right. And they say a backup should be 3-2-1.
Yeah.
You should back everything up in three places. You should back up.
Three copies of all your data
in at least two separate places, one of which is offsite.
Right.
Excuse me. So, yeah. So, everybody, pcloud.com, it's $122.50 for a half a terabyte of storage.
And, for a lifetime. That's incredible.
For a lifetime. Right. It's a one-time payment. And as David said, it's ludicrously easy to set up. Once you do, you never think about it again. It just keeps running. I don't know why you wouldn't do it.
Well, I just want to say thanks for recommending that.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Okay. Take care, guys.
Have fun. Now, the interesting thing, of course, is that half a terabyte may not be enough for your pictures.
Yeah. A lot of people say I don't have that many, you know, only 2,000 or 3,000.
Yeah. Yeah. But for pictures,
I think I'm over 100,000 on my list.
Yep, I'm easily well over that. But pictures I keep up in Google in Google Photos because I have a Pixel phone. I can keep them in original format. But the reality is that even if you keep them in the quote unquote lower format, which is still very high definition, but even if you keep them in that lower format. 99% of the time, you're sending them for people to look at on their phones and on their tablets, which don't even use the full resolution at all. So why not? You know? So at any rate, get yourself some offline storage. It's not terribly expensive at the moment, and it would do both you and your significant and insignificant others good to have them. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Don from Pittsburgh, New York. Hiya, Don. What's up?
Hello. I continue to get updates from Microsoft for Windows 7.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, they appear to be from Microsoft, and all the links seem to work. Are those updates really legitimate?
Maybe.
there have been several extremely important updates that Microsoft released recently.
Yeah.
The NSA actually told Microsoft about a bug instead of exploiting it themselves.
Right, and so they patched it.
Yeah.
So, yes, I would say that it is 99.99% likely that they are coming from Windows. Well, you probably weren't listening the first hour, but one of the things that we talked about in the first hour was that Windows 7... although it's been declared dead at least twice, has continued to have updates because Microsoft keeps screwing things up. And so they are still putting out security updates, even though the operating system is dead. They keep saying that's their last one, but then they get something like this from the NSA, which is basically the government telling them fix this or else.
Yeah, the NSA usually keeps the exploits so they can exploit them themselves.
Right.
And then we had what was it? The Bluekeep virus that shut down Europe, but fortunately got killed before it made it to America.
Yeah, but yeah, it is likely that those updates, you know, can't give you 100%, but it's 99% likely that those updates are these super important. Do it even though the operating system is dead, security updates from Microsoft.
And it also might be other Microsoft software you have, like Microsoft Office or Windows Defender, getting updates too, not just Windows itself.
Right.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate the reassurance, and I will install.
There you go.
Okay.
And get off Windows 7.
We have heard... I have done it myself, that if you still have a Windows 7 machine, you can go to the Microsoft download site, download Windows 10, and install it without paying.
Yes, if you have a legitimate copy of Windows 7.
Right. But Microsoft stopped offering a free upgrade. but it keeps working. Well, so until they close that little loophole.
You can, yes, if you are running Windows 7, you can just go to Microsoft's download site, which was on our website somewhere.
We've posted it a couple
times.
Going
to post it again. You can download a copy of Windows 10, and if you have a legitimate copy of Windows 7, to be safe, go into it and copy out the key.
But wait a minute.
Hold on. And then when you install 10, theoretically, it will just pick up that key and work. But if it doesn't, you've printed out the key so you could put it back in.
And what I would caution is first, think about the age of your machine.
Yeah.
I mean, you're looking at, again, they still have that list to see if your machine will even handle Windows 10.
Do you have enough disk space? Do you have enough memory? Is your processor big enough? Are there drivers for your devices?
Right. And just because you can install Windows 10 does not necessarily mean you should.
Oftentimes, you're better off getting a newer machine that would come with Windows 10 pre-installed and all the drivers preloaded.
Right. And on something that's known to work. You want a minimum of 8 gig of RAM. You really want a minimum of a 2 gigahertz processor. More is better. I know. Well, 1.7, 2 gigahertz, whatever that is, would be the thing you'd want. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 28 minutes after the hour. It is Soundbites. It is member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites, and we have Rich from Irondequoit on the line. What's up, Rich?
Hi, guys. Well, pardon my ignorance. What is an extension? You talk about extensions before. What is it? Are they?
An extension is an add-on. We're talking particularly in this case about extensions for the Chrome browser.
Firefox calls, calls theirs add-ons.
Right. Firefox calls theirs add-ons. But an extension is an add-on, and it is a separate program that you often add to a browser in this case. To give you some functionality that the browser originally didn't have. So, for example, many people add a password manager to their browser so that it handles passwords for them.
Which I have, and that's an extension.
Yep. Oh. Many other people use a program called uBlock Origin, which will block ads on your website, on the websites that you go to. And that's an extension. I also use one called WhatFont, which tells me what font people used on their websites, which I'm a font, bit of a font geek, not a good one, but a bit of a font geek, so I always like to see new ones.
You said uBlock?
uBlock Origin, UBLOCK space uh-huh. Origin. Steve's going to put up a link in a minute or two.
Okay.
To uBlock, but... Okay. You can find it by going to your browser and add it, you know, going to, on Firefox, it's add-ons, and Chrome, it's extensions, and searching through, the web store, in the Google case, going through the web store and searching for an extension called uBlock Origin and, adding
that's
that
one expression, is it?
It's two words, uBlock Origin.
Origin. Okay. My most serious question is Netgear router upstairs on the second floor, and I have two extenders, I believe they're called, throughout the house.
Mm-hmm.
And I plug them into the wall. I presume that I needed to do something more to them to get them to work because my smart TV in the kitchen. I need to always reprogram it for a Spectrum when I turn it on. What must I or should I have done to these extenders to get them to connect successfully to the router on the second floor?
There should have been some sort of a setup program that came with it so that on your computer you set up that router. Basically,
or your phone. You could get.
Yeah, a lot of them have phone apps now. You set up that extension. It has to talk to the main router, know it's there, sign in with the right password, so then it can extend your network.
Okay, okay. I should probably go on Netgear upstairs and see if it's successfully connecting to the extenders, probably.
But let me ask you a separate question. Do you have any other network devices in the kitchen?
In the kitchen, no, just smart TV, which okay, is not so smart lately. But
but hold on a second. If you can reconnect it every time, then it is getting a signal. So I'm not thinking that the problem is in the extender. My thinking is the problem is in the television.
Okay. Okay.
Right? If you can make the connection, then that part is working.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I do have to work with it every time I turn it on, but it successfully gets channeled. So I would think that you are correct there.
Yeah, it's likely that. Now, whether or not there's you forgot to hit the button that says save this configuration. If your television has that, I don't know. It depends on the. It depends.
Samsung, yeah. So there may be a save item of some kind on the remote or on the TV.
Right. Or remember password. The other thing too is, do you have the TV plugged into a power switch? Power strip.
Just right into the wall.
Okay. Because sometimes when you turn off a device from a power strip or a switch. It loses power, which makes it forget all the settings. If you just turn it.
Well, that makes sense. Yeah, no, that's not the case here.
Right. But I would suggest that first I would take a look at the TV because you could spend an hour fooling around with the router and that won't solve the problem. Check the TV first. If that's okay, then yeah, play with the router. But I honestly think that if you're getting a signal every time you rejigger the television, that the problem is in the television.
Okay.
Is that a new technical term?
Rejigger, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, rejigger the thingamabob is the full term. Yeah. Okay.
I should tell you guys that while I was waiting for you to come on, there was a lot of background conversation. I don't know if that's normal, but you said that you had a tech this week adjusting something.
Yeah.
You want to have them rechecked because there was a lot of background
talking. All righty. Thank you. I wonder whose fault that is.
And thank you guys very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
You guys feeding the board.
Mine was off.
You got to pot down the mics.
He's recording.
Yeah, you can hear the mic when you're on hold.
See, it's nothing to do with me. It's you guys playing with your devices.
Yeah, you still got to pot them down.
If I remember, I'm just getting the board.
I get it. I get it.
Everything. Yeah.
I got to memorize where our new settings are now.
After Rob fixed everything.
Right.
It fixed with air quotes.
Fixed with big air quotes.
Somebody should.
But yeah, so we hope that you, if you're finding that we sound a little different this week, it is because Rob rejiggered the board.
We got some new equipment in that's supposed to make things better, but there's always a teething period. Well, they aren't better for a while.
Yeah. As those of you who do anything with audio know, it's never the same 2 days in a row, and getting it to work properly the first time is a bit of black magic. So Rob was in here today to do that, and that would be this side. Okay. Let's head back to the phones. Our next caller is, what the heck just happened there? Our next caller is Scott from Rochester, New York. Hi, Scott, what's up?
Hey, how's it going? I've enjoyed growing books for several years now. I'm on my second one, but I just found out about the auto update expiration. I haven't heard your show enough to hear you discuss this. But my question is, well, the Chromebook I have now, I just purchased about a year ago, and I see that it's going to expire in June of next year.
Yep.
So I'm thinking, that's not a very long life. And So I'm wondering, what do you think of these two alternatives if when the time comes, Cloud Ready Home Edition from Neverware or the Gallium operating system?
I haven't played much with Gallium yet. I'm not saying that it isn't amazing, but I just haven't played with it much yet. The thing that I would definitely say is take a look at Cloud Ready and see if it will run on the device you're talking about.
I
have Cloud Ready on several of my older laptops, and it is quite amazing. Quite amazing, in fact. So, yeah. But the Google Chromebooks have a UAE. What is it called? It's the AUE. Yeah. The auto update end date, I guess. And the thing about that is, it's predicated on the platform of the motherboard and not of the computer.
All right, so you probably bought a new computer but didn't realize the board was 3 years old.
Right. I just bought the Chromebook that I'm using here is an HP 14-inch Chromebook, and I made sure that I knew what board it had in it and what revision of that board it had in it. So I know this laptop is good through 2026.
Yeah.
And they're saying that any new devices that come out, new platforms that come out, will be supported for 8 years.
Okay, so they've upgraded that from 6 years. I just read 6 years.
Right, it was six, then it was seven. This one was seven because I bought it in 2019. It's good to throw in 26. And the new ones will be 8 years. So Google heard people. It's just that they didn't go backwards.
Well, yeah, since I never knew about this before, I didn't pay attention to what you're saying.
Right.
When I bought this one. So where in the specs does that show that?
Well,
I know there's on the Google website, there's a place where you can look up the different models and see what the expiration date is for them.
Yeah, I'm posting that link now. But it's generally true of every computer and every OS. Eventually, it will stop getting updates.
Right.
Yeah, but like somebody made the point that, you know, a Windows computer will last much longer. You can use it much longer than a Chromebook.
Well, can still continue to use it, but just like Windows, it will stop getting updates. So I've got the original CR48, which was the reference model for Chromebooks. It still works every single day. It just hasn't gotten updates in about 5 years.
Isn't that a bit risky to not be getting updates?
Not so much on a Chromebook.
Yeah,
and you know what you're doing.
And I know what I'm doing.
For the average general user, you probably wouldn't want to do that.
Because though it's... doesn't get the updates, it still knows its original format, and if stuff tries to sneak in there and change stuff, the operating system still doesn't like that.
Yeah.
Because it's protected.
But now isn't that where, Cloud Ready would come in? That I could be getting updates then if I installed that?
Yes. Cloud Ready actually runs on a form. Well, so does a Chromebook. Runs on a form of Linux, which is regularly updated. So, yes, a Cloud Ready would be fine if Cloud Ready runs on your hardware. Again, check the Cloud Ready website to find out which particular devices it supports and if it supports your device. So, for example, my Chromebook is an HP Chromebook 14-DB0003NA. And the platform that it runs on is 12499.66.0.
Left elbow.
Exactly. Stable channel grunt. And so I could look up that Chromebook 14 on the auto update page and see that, in fact, it's good through June of 2026. So I checked that out, in fact, before I bought it.
Yeah.
Because what I did was I bought this refurbished. It only cost me like $120 because I bought it refurbished. But I checked. Well, yeah, it's refurbished. It's somebody bought it, didn't like it, sent it back. They can't sell it as new.
Yep.
Yeah.
Right. So it probably had like an hour's worth of use because it's a brand new machine.
Yeah,
right.
They still back it.
Right. So it's refurbished. So they had to sell it cheap. Good for me. But before I bought it in November of 2019, I checked on the end of life, and it's June 2026.
You know what they're referring to those now as?
What?
Instead of refurbished? Opened box.
Well, or renewed.
You renewed, open box, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Yep.
There's also somewhere actually in
the Chrome settings somewhere?
The Chrome settings that tells you that. I'm just looking to see where that is. Oh, there it is. So if you open up the settings in Chrome, right, the status box in the lower right, and you hit the gear to open up settings, then on the lower left is about Chrome OS, and then you click on additional settings, additional details, excuse me. The second thing down is the update schedule, and mine says this device will get automatic software and security updates until June 2026. It says it right on it.
Nice.
So, I can't find that right now, but
You might want to check on yours in case the original information you found wasn't right.
Yep. Okie doke.
Yeah. Well, one last question. How easy is it to install the cloud ready?
If it is a compatible device, you just put the USB or CD or whichever you have in. And hit the install button and sit and wait.
Okay. Do I leave the Chrome OS on the Chrome?
It will not. It will replace it.
Oh, I see. Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
But definitely check as to whether or not it's a compatible device.
Yeah.
Okie doke.
Okay.
All right. Thanks. Got to move on. We've got a couple more people waiting.
And while I'm taking a call, you can answer this question. Somebody wants to know, can you please repeat the cloud storage for $122?
Yeah, that's pcloud, pcloud.com, pcloud.com, or I suppose cloud.com. I think it was up on our website, was it?
It's probably fallen off by now.
Oh, yeah. I'll okay, so again. Steve's gonna put a link on our website.
There are several other ones, too, but pCloud seems to be currently the best deal.
The least expensive, yeah. And it's it's half a terabyte
And you get 10 gigabytes free. That's high for the free cloud services.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. And so far, it's been utterly perfect for me. Again, it's not my only backup. So it's not really as big a problem. All right. Back to the phones. And our next caller is Gary from Greece, New York. Hiya, Gary. What's up?
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I'll try to be quick because I know we're running out of time.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question about whether something is real or bogus on my screen. It sure looks real. It says I get a little message indicator in the lower right corner of the screen in the taskbar saying I've got a message. So I take a look, and it says Microsoft account problem. We need to fix your Microsoft account. Most likely your password changed. Select here to fix it in shared experience setting.
I don't know. If you are...
I know. That's why... I'll tell you what I did. I mean, this is, if it's real, it sure looks real. I clicked. So it takes me to shared experiences accounts. It says shared experiences, use all system accounts to authorize actions. Some of your accounts require attention. Fix now. I even clicked that. Now, I didn't go all the way, but here's how far I went. A box pops up with my email address, and it says enter password. And I do have one. And it says sign in. Well, that's where I stopped.
Good.
But now it won't let me do anything. I can't even click away from the box. So all I can do is restart, And then it's working on updates, although I didn't install any updates in the last, 15 seconds. Then it's back to normal after it restarts. So, but it looks so authentic. This is not via email. This is popping up on my screen.
It's in your Messenger. Yeah. It's Microsoft's Messenger program. And yes, hackers use that as well. The other thing to be aware of is when you go, if you do click on that link, check the URL that you're at. It is not Microsoft. It's going to be somebody else. It's not going to be Microsoft.com. It might be something.microsoft.something.com, but it's not Microsoft.com. That's one way that it's not real. If you are on a Microsoft site, then yeah, it might be real. If it's an actual Microsoft site, the way you figure that out is you go to Microsoft.com and log in with your login credentials.
I think this is coming though from a setting inside of Windows, not from a website.
Yeah, it is.
If it is legitimate, you can go to the settings yourself and do it yourself. Don't click on the link in the message. Go into settings yourself.
Okay, and actually I did that, and it seems real there too. And I just started thinking, wow, is this so horrible an attack that it's even disguising itself in settings?
No, if it's in settings, it's about 99.999999% legit.
Okay. Well, it does pop up there.
It wouldn't hurt to do a malware check just in case.
Yeah, dance the security tango just to be on the safe side.
Okay. All right, I will do that. Thank you.
All right, good luck, Gary.
Thanks.
One of the things we've noticed is that the bad guys are generally very lazy, and quite frequently there's spelling errors and the icons are wrong. We joke about the fake Flash update notices that tricks so many people. They don't use the real Adobe Flash icon. If they took an extra 10 seconds, literally an extra 10 seconds, they could get the real Adobe icon.
Yep.
And think how many more people they could get.
Yeah, exactly.
And so there are some of them that look really, really, really legit, but usually you can tell they're fake because it's the wrong things.
Yep, I know. Yeah. But so be careful. And Gary did the right thing by checking with us before he did anything. But there are some legit things, but if you can figure out a way to do it without clicking on those links, you're better off. So, Gary, if you go into notifications and you can turn them off there, you're probably better off. It's getting harder and harder these days.
What's interesting is the tech note I found is how to turn off the notification.
Not how to fix the
thing it's notifying you about.
Right, yeah. Right. I get that. All right. Well, that music tells me that we're done for another week. I want to apologize to the people who are phoning in. Well, now we can't take another call. We're done. Please, next week, call earlier and more often in the Chicago way. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I want to thank Rob Linton for coming in and fooling around with the board and not us. And then we will be back. I want to thank all of you who did call in. And we will be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites right here in the Truly Great. And truly grateful to you that we can continue to be member supported with your help. Jazz 90.1. We will see you in just 166 hours. Be good to each other, will you? See you next week.